Blog Talk Radio.
Today, coming to you live from the Mad Dog Dynasty League headquarters in Maguanago, Wisconsin, Fat Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Welcome to the doghouse. I'm your host, the commissioner of the Mad Dog Dynasty League, and aforementioned Fat Guy with a Phone himself, Rick Goreski. We're getting the band back together to talk about the 2016 Mad Dog offseason. I guess we're going to continue to talk about it because we already got five episodes in the can. We're going team by team, division by division, reviewing the 2016 offseason in what is now, what, a 15-part series? For those that don't know the genesis of this, it started as one show and then it went to the idea that maybe it would be two or three, then four, then 12, now 15. At this point, I'm estimating that we're going to be doing these off-season recap shows through 2017. So, honestly, I think 15 is pretty much where it's going to land, give or take a show or two. We're doing one for each team, and then we're going to do a division recap show afterwards. So, I digress. And that's not easy for me to do because I'm really not sure what that word means, but what I do know is how to take the show up a notch, which is why it's well past the time to add the we to me. It's time to introduce my co-host for today's show. First up, he refuses. Wait. He refuses to start DBs. He thinks it's short for douchebag. The tone setter, the owner of the Stoneform Pallies, Steve Wellman. Steve.
Good afternoon.
Hey, buddy. We got another guy coming. He's not here yet. Will be any moment, I assume. Excuse me. He better be. He picked the time. But great. I'm glad to move on to the white division. The blue division was a heck of a lot of fun. But blue every day. It's like, come on, let's talk about a different division for a while. So I think we're headed in the right direction as Gar Nelson's own Klingons around Uranus are the topic that we're going to dive into. So I'm obviously stalling, talking slower. I tell you what, why don't I just keep reading some of the intro, and when Tom gets here, we can dive in. How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan.
Well, there you have it. 100% backed by all people on the line. Gentlemen, the blue division is in the books. It is, right? Because, I mean, if you want to do some more shows on the blue, honestly, I can't get enough. So,
no, I think we're ready to move on.
Yeah, it's time to move on to the white division. And the white division itself being something that in many ways reminds me of the old-fashioned NFC Central, often referred to as the black and blue division. You're in this division, Steve. You guys in the white just beat the hell out of each other every year. And, oh, by the way, they've also, and they'll tell you this, unfortunately, mercilessly, they've won four of the league's five titles thus far. So you can set your watch to the fact that the white division is going to go down to the final week of the season each and every year. It just, that's the way it happens. So, Steve, let me click a button here in the background. Something was distracting me. Pardon me. Get myself back on track. So, with that said, this year appears to be a year of transitioning in the white division, in my opinion, whereas some of the teams in the blue, a division that has been the weakest of our three divisions over the past 5 years, while that division seemingly has taken some steps forward, some of the teams in white have gone into rebuilding mode, while others find themselves with some aging players, some expiring contracts, because you remember you get the guys at the auction the first year, and then you draft the following year. You have max three-year deals and one chance to re-sign them. So those contracts are coming up, and people are having to make decisions on players that they hit on. You know, can you keep a Laurinaitis, for instance, a guy whose salary has gone up and his play is starting to decrease? Can you afford to keep that guy? That's just an example of the kind of things that are being decided in the White Division.
Well,
but anyway,
I'll make no bones about what I was going to say, Rick. I'll make no bones about it. It's not so much the catalyst for the team. Let's face it, it's just really three teams trying to catch one team. Lost in the Sauce is so powerful right now. And I think the other three teams are starting to realize that they need to, you know, quote unquote, step up their game if they're going to try and catch this guy for division title.
I think that every team does have a chance because every team has demonstrated an ability. You know, it's not always the same team, although Tim's won the last two. Even the wild card spot, whoever doesn't win the division is always fighting for the wild card spot. So I just think this is a division where there's lots of strategy to talk about over the next four shows. I'm having somebody bring me my Excel so I can text Tom and see where he's at. But go right ahead.
It's the strategy of catching Lost for the Sauce. I mean, I have, for the first 4 years, I thought I had a good strategy going. I had the likes of Aaron Rodgers on my team, Brandon Marshall. I had a pretty good defense, and through some unfortunate picks by me and some fortunate picks by Lost in the Sauce, I kept finding myself being outdistanced from the top year in and year out. And last year was obviously the culmination. That was probably one of my worst years ever. And my division record was 1-5, so that was that just was the wake up call that said I've got to start doing something here if I want to even compete anymore.
Well, and that's where I say is that it's 5 years in, people are like yourself are making a decision that, hey, I gave it with what my plan was. I gave it a go, and I don't like what I'm seeing, so I'm going to rebuild. I'm going to tear it up, and I'm going to go in a different direction. When we get to your team, we'll be talking about, the idea of trading an Aaron Rodgers, for instance, one of the top players in the league. Decisions like that were made all throughout this division, including the team we're talking about today, Klingons around Uranus. They tore it down. I mean, at one point they had, and I don't want to exaggerate because I really do recall this, I think they had 8 players under contract at one point. Now, contracts had expired, and of their entire roster, they had 8 players signed, and then they had decisions to make on the rest of them, and now where they ended up is, I think, 25 players. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit, but that's another team that is obviously turning almost half their roster over. So why don't I go ahead and what I want to do is to set things off here is explain to the audience there's a team, there's a starter points by position section on the website. And what I want to do to set things off here is list the team rankings from 2015 in the starter points by position within their division. And I think since we're talking about off-season moves with an eye towards improvement, we ought to start out by knowing where the team stacked up last year in comparison with teams in their division and as opposed to the league average. So let's go ahead and just get that basic information out there. And it starts off with Gar's team. At quarterback, the league average was 394 points. Klingons finished fourth at quarterback in their division at 319 points. So they were a little shy of the average, a lot shy, actually. At offensive flex, the league average was, I should stop and qualify quickly. What I'm calling offensive flex, I'm factoring just the running back wide receiver points because that's what the majority of the league trot out there. tight end is listed separately. We do talk about the tight ends, but unfortunately I can't splice out the 1% or 2% that people go, you know, with an extra tight end and give you offensive flex numbers in that fashion. So when I say offensive flex, I'm referring to running back wide receiver use. That is what most teams trot out there at Oflex. I just wanted to technically state a tight end could factor into this for a team, but, you know, trust me that the percentages are minute. Let's get back on track here. At Oflex, the average for 2015 was 929 for the entire league. Kling finished second in the white division with 908 points, so they're just shy of the league average at Oflex. Tight end average was 197. Kling came in third in the white division here, but, you know, it must be said that all but one team in the white exceeded the league average at tight end. Gronkowski's in this division, so that ought to tell you how high the tight end numbers are in the white. Gar finished third at 210 tight end points. That's just 3 points behind the second place finisher, Lost in the Sauce, who had 213. So very good at tight end here, despite the fact that Kling had a third place finish. At place kicker, Kling was dead on league average with 128 points. Gar finished third in the division at place kicker with that. Defensive line, Kling finished third in the white, 275 points on the season. Meanwhile, the league average was 340, so 65-point gap at defensive line compared to the league average. And last but not least, defensive flex, where the league average was 1,330 points for the season. Kling finished above average with 1,340 points, which put him second in the white division. So there you have it. That's where Kling was entering the 2016 offseason. He was kind of second, third within his division at most positions. There were a couple of positions where he was really hurting. He was really off the pace, quarterback and pardon me, quarterback and defensive line, to name a couple. A little bit shy on Oflex, but why don't we go ahead and talk about what Gar proceeded to do. So take a quick peek, no time yet. So here's what Gar did. Signing-wise, Gar signed Devontae Freeman to a 3-year deal at $15.05 a year. Huge contract. Deion Lewis from New England put him on a 2-year deal at $1.32 a year. Gar picked up, re-signed Ted Ginn Jr. of Carolina, 2 years, $391. Stevie Johnson of San Diego, 2 years, $110 a year. Signed Antonio Gates to a 1-year deal at $3.30. Very smart. Signed Brandon McManus of Denver, the place kicker, 3 years at $164. Renewed Averill from Seattle, the defensive lineman, 2 years, $4.80, a guy who, oddly enough, Steve, you and I both have owned. Kelvin Shepard, linebacker from the Giants, $3, at least some of these positions, that's where they were when I wrote this down. If they've changed teams, then forgive me, but Shepard was re-signed 2 years, $3.88 a year. And Clinton Dix from the Packers signed to a 3-year deal at $2.75 a year. It's not over yet, because Gar exercised two transition tags, signing Jordy Nelson to a 2-year deal at $8.68 a year, and Reggie Nelson of Cincinnati, the defensive backs, on a transition tag, $3.96 a year on a 2-year. Is it a 2-year deal? Got to go and look real quick. Reggie Nelson signed to a 2-year deal. Yes. So those were the signings. I do want to mention the cuts. First, we had a couple of retirements, Malcolm Floyd of San Diego and Heath Miller, a couple of steady veterans, both retired this year. I forgot to mention that Gar also put a right of first refusal tag on Frank Gore. He also put a right of first refusal tag on Michael Crabtree, and he put a right of first refusal tag on Carlos Dansby of Cleveland. So Gar will have the ability to match offers to any of those three players at the auction. As far as cuts, I'm going to take a moment here. That third guy gives me a lot of buffer, a little extra time. Hasselbeck was cut. Peyton Manning retired. Matt Schwab, Baltimore, was cut. Team's better off without those three guys, frankly. Those are all improvements. I'm staking the flag right now. Alfred Morris was cut. James Starks. Sankey from Tennessee was cut. That's it's like a mercy kill. Ware from Kansas City, the running back, Spencer Ware, cut. Chris Thompson from Washington was cut. Pierre Garçon was cut. Andre Johnson was cut. Eddie Royal was cut out of Chicago. Tight end Crockett Gilmore was cut in Baltimore. Ben Watson was cut, who's now with Baltimore. At defensive line, Bailey from Kansas City, Legit from San Diego, Wynn from the Giants, they're all cut. Hitchens from Dallas was cut. Deshaun Goldson, who's a free agent, or at least was at the time I typed this, he was cut. And Glover Quinn, formerly of Detroit, he was cut as well. I think he's still with Detroit, actually. He was cut as well. One more point on the releases. Kling, gotta find the window I opened. Also cut Nick Folk, plays kicker for the Jets. Took a cap hit on that one, but he cut Nick Folk. And there you have it. Those are the moves and cuts. Now, there's also trades to talk about. Kling made two trades in the offseason. He gave up he gave up his 2017 third-round pick to get Cameron Wake and a fifth-round pick in this year's draft. And then Kling, during the draft, made a trade, trading up to pick 2-1 of this year's draft and picked up pick 4-2 and 5-10. In exchange, he gave pick 2-6, 3-6, and 5-6. So it was a little draft position change within this 2016 draft. Draft-wise, what did Gar do with those picks? His first-round pick, Jared Goff of the Rams. Second-round pick was Michael Thomas, wide receiver, New Orleans. His third pick. It was technically in the fourth round, the second pick of the fourth round. Austin Hooper, tight end, Atlanta. Mid-fourth round, he picked up Jordan Howard, running back, Chicago. Fifth round, he had two fifth-round picks. The first fifth-round pick was early. It was Scooby Wright, the linebacker from Cleveland. And the last pick was Darian Thompson, a defensive back from the Giants. Steve, I relish the opportunity to bring in our other co-host at this time. He is the owner of the Blair Walsh Experiment, and yes, he got him via trade, place kicker Blair Walsh. Owner of the Malicious Minds, Tom Buckles. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, a little late, but better than that.
That's cool. You got the notes ahead of time, so you kind of know where we were headed, hopefully, and I read some of the placement and basic information. Just got done going through Klingon's moves, so let's kick right in here. You ready to go on this, Tom? Because I had you leading off on the comments, and I'm about to hand it off. You good to go, or do you want me to hand it to Steve first?
Let's do stuff.
Okay, Gar's roster today stands at 25 players. He has $27.44 in cap space. Kling needs a league-high 15 players to round out his roster. The next closest is Tron, who needs 11. So time to turn the show over to our co-hosts to find out what they think of Kling's offseason moves. Let's kick it off with you, Tom. What do you think of Kling's offseason? Generic impressions before we go position by position.
I like that he trimmed a lot of the fat. Could have used a little more cap room, but did a lot of nice stuff, I guess you could say, too. I like some of his defensive flex pickup stuff that he did. So I like what he did so far.
Steve, initial impressions of that offseason?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with the fact that he did a good job of trimming the fat, getting rid of some bad guys. He still has a couple of questionable guys under contract. So, I mean, he's kind of limited with what he could do as far as what his cap room allows and what his needs are. I kind of wished he would have maybe taken some of those guys that he cut and tried to get rid of them and just stack up some draft picks, because I don't think his draft helped him out too well. I think he's going to have to wait till next year before we see a market improvement in his team. But I think he took all the necessary steps in the first phase, and that was getting rid of some garbage.
You really can't complain when you're cutting guys like Hasselbeck, Schwab. You know, it's as I mentioned with a different team that we talked about, that's addition by subtraction. You know, they're better by virtue of not having those players soak up a roster spot, because the value is limited in what they can bring to the table as far as upside. Why don't we get right into the quarterback
agree.
Spot? let's segue right into the quarterback spot. Tom, what do you think of the quarterbacks that Klingon has? In case you missed it, they were below average here last year. Do they improve, and if so, how? Did they improve this year?
I didn't see an improvement. They did pick up a future quarterback to hopefully man that squad for years to come, but Flacco's on the opposite end of his career in my eyes. Tannehill's in a make-or-break year, so they're putting everything around Tannehill. It's just I think that offensive system is going to handcuff them like they did when they had Lamar Miller. I think it's his boat to run. If he can't handle it, then he's out. So, like I said, I don't like the quarterback crew here.
Steve, what about quarterbacks? Do you feel Kling improved this year?
No, I think he kind of just went level. I mean, unfortunately, with the quarterback position, just the act of getting rid of some guy doesn't make it better. I think he didn't, if Jared Goff turns out to be good, then we can say that this was the year that he got better. But for right now, I think he's still going to be riding the same two quarterbacks he did last year in Tannehill and Flacco. So I don't see where there was much improvement.
I'm going to go the opposite direction, and I'm going to argue that they did improve. And again, everybody's got to remember that some improvements happen naturally. They don't have to be an acquisition. Ryan Tannehill getting paired with Adam Gase, who has made multiple quarterbacks look good, including Jay Cutler, who was literally on his way out of Chicago when Gase got there. Peyton Manning had, I think, his best year of his career under Gase out in Denver. I do think that situation is an improvement over what Ryan Tannehill had been working with, which was Joe Philbin, who now, after he's gone, we're getting all the stories about how he never wanted Tannehill. He didn't want him to be drafted. He didn't want him to be his quarterback. He wanted someone else. Now it all kind of makes sense in hindsight why it wasn't working. Joe Flacco coming back from injury. They added Mike Wallace to the receiving core out there, and Joe Flacco is a good deep ball thrower, and that's what Mike Wallace does best. That could work out. Jared Goff adding
that to the team. So you realistically think that he's going to improve on his quarterback numbers dramatically?
Joe Flacco? Yeah, he was injured last year. He only threw 197.
Well,
I guarantee it.
No, Klingon. Klingon himself.
Yep.
What you say he had 319? You think he's going to go for 360 now?
Do you disagree that Adam Gase took Jay Cutler from almost being tossed out of Chicago into being somebody that, they're happy with? No rumblings this year about Cutler.
I think it's a possibility, but the problem lies in is from the shoulders up. I don't think Tannehill's there for a complete – I don't think he's like a true quarterback, like an elite professional quarterback from shoulders up.
Well, let me say it this way. First, and I got to throw in that he picked up Goff, which is a young quarterback that has just as much potential as Carson Wentz, who I think both of you lauded You're in Trouble for picking up and said that was an improvement for You're in Trouble. So Goff improves his future, prospects. Tannehill, at the very least, I think we can all agree his situation has improved, correct? Does anyone want to disagree that having Adam Gase as his coach improves his situation at quarterback, along with a healthy Devontae Parker? They drafted another kid,
Carew.
Gosh. Yeah, Carew. Scott picked him up. Anybody not feel that Tannehill's situation has improved?
The situation has improved, but like I said, from shoulders up, I don't think he improved the quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think that Tannehill has another step to take. I think he's pretty much who he is.
He hasn't been as bad as people have made him out to be. I think he's going to take that step this year that people have been wondering if he was going to take, but he's passed for 4,000 yards in two consecutive seasons, and in three consecutive seasons he's been between 24 and 27 touchdowns passing. So
yeah, but I mean,
I think
how many steps were Sam Bradford given before we realized that he's just not going to be that elite quarterback that everybody thought he was going to be? I think Tannehill's the same thing. I mean, he's a good starting quarterback, there's no doubt about it, but you're not going to see him listed in the top 15 or 20 quarterbacks in the league. He's just, he is who he is.
And there was always question of him coming out of college, too. There's constant question marks about that guy coming out. and Sherman was the one who drafted him. So, being the offensive coordinator when he was down there in Miami, because he had knowledge of the kid, and with him being in the NFL, with the system that he ran in college, with some tweaks to manipulate it for the NFL, and he still couldn't grasp. I don't know. I think he had enough weapons last year, even though Parker went down. He still had Landry. He still had Matthews. You had Lamar Miller, Cameron. You know, you had
enough. The tight ends, coach, the whole team melted down last year, though. It was amazing that they kept things going to respectability at the end. But I do want to point out that Tannehill came in as a guy who converted from wide receiver to quarterback, and his development track is taking longer because he didn't have all that time at the position throughout high school and college to, you know, walk into the pros with it. That's all I see, is a guy that, and then complicate things by having two different coaches in his start there. I think it's, yeah, two different coaches. Anyway,
yeah, in the last 3 years, he's a 4,000-yard, 25-touchdown, 12-interception guy. And I just don't see him improving drastically over there.
If he goes over 35, then, you know what, oh, my God, something miraculous happened, you know. But 30 is the peak for him. The ceiling I see is 30 for him ever.
He finished 16th in a year that was a meltdown for the Dolphins. It was an absolute meltdown season for the Dolphins, and he still finished 16th. So I think all I'm saying is that the situation changed, and you guys aren't that high on the player. I'm higher than you on the player, but I think that by virtue of the situation changing, this is the same criteria we've applied to all the other teams we've talked about, that opens up upside, which I'm going to go ahead on my vote and consider that an improvement. But clear message sent that you guys don't think that the position is improved. So let's move over to Old
Flex. I want to invoke the Bradford clause, and we'll move on.
Well, it's before we blow all our time on Kling's quarterbacks. Good thing he's only got 25 players to talk about. Old Flex. Kling was strong second last year at Old Flex within the white division. He seems to have preserved the nucleus of that, although that $15 contract on Devontae Freeman scares me. What say you about Kling's Old Flex, Tom?
I don't know. Injury guys. Ingram stepped up, but has never proven that he's back-to-back years at the running back situation. I like his pickup of Thomas in New Orleans. We don't know what Jordy is. Ted Ginn was just a production of what Cam Newton was last year. There was nobody else there. So Ted Ginn just walked into the perfect scenario. Now he's been relegated to the third string receiver on that team now. Forsett's pretty much at the end of his curve. Freeman, I would have liked him not to do that. That's why I didn't sign my David Johnson for a 3-year early contract, because that's a lot of money for a guy who fell off from week ten on. He hit a wall. But I do like
Steve,
that he get a young tight end. So,
Steve, jump in on the Old Flex.
Well, I think he did okay. I mean, I can see the signing of Devontae Freeman, and I don't think he fell off as hard as everybody wants to say he did in the last couple of weeks of the season. I think the whole team fell off. It wasn't just Freeman. As far as
7 yards per carry.
Yeah, but the whole team sunk, Tom. I mean,
the only one that didn't sink was
Ryan
Julio Jones.
Well, yeah, Matt Ryan would throw up jump balls and he'd go get them. I mean, the guy took a massive amount of sacks in the last half of the season. The offensive line is terrible. There's no doubt about it. And it just got worse with injuries and bringing in second, third-tier players to play the line. So I see Devontae Freeman. He scored 305 points last year. I could see him doing that maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less. The contract is high, but that's what you got to pay at this point in the tenure of our league. I mean, I'm more concerned about the $10 he's got to sit on with Justin Forsett, but luckily that's only 4 more years. He can let him fall off. I agree Ted Ginn's going to go backwards now that Benjamin's back. Benjamin and Funchess are probably the 1 and 2 there. But it was a good move to get Michael Thomas. It was a really good move to get the transition tag on Jordy Nelson. So I think he's going to be fine. He should be right around the same as he did last year. And if that's the case, then he's in good shape there.
I'm going to say, again, I'm going to take the stance that he improved. First and foremost, he drafted two young offensive players that both could play a role this year. Mike Thomas, New Orleans, Jordan Howard of Chicago. Both guys could factor in before things are done on their respective teams. Going back to the discussion you guys were having with Freeman, I would have put a two-year deal on him. The three-year deal is scary for me. I get it. He must believe in him. But, man, if that doesn't work out, he's stuck with that $15 contract next year and no real way to get out of it. Forsett, the good news is he could cut him at any time. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, plus Tevin Coleman was drafted by this new regime that just came in last year. And Freeman was a holdover from the group just the year before. So Tevin Coleman is actually their guy that they're touting as their main back and pushing for. So it was just by chance dude was hurt and Freeman went in there and did what he did. So they're still pushing for Coleman to be their guy.
I think that Freeman's going to continue as long as he keeps performing. They'll let him have the opportunity. Coleman, without a doubt, is going to play a role on that team. But I think, hands down, I mean, recently they've had Coleman doing some kick return stuff. You don't do that if you're looking for the guy to play a serious starter role. But he's got the talent, and like you said, this organization, this regime picked him. That speaks loudly. That's why I would have gone 2 years on it. You know you're going to keep him at least this year, which means if it all craps out, you can walk away from the deal next year with only a $750 cap hit. But speaking of cap hits, Justin Forsett, if Forsett doesn't work out, Gar can dump him and pick up $5 in cap room. So I don't blame him for not dumping him. I think you do keep him at this point. It's wise to keep him. But I like what he's got at offensive flex, and I think he did improve. Can we move to the tight ends, where Gates and Hooper are his tight end stable? And specifically for Gar, Kling was above average last year within the entire scope of the entire league, yet he only finished third in his division. The question here is whether Gates has another year left in the tank. So over to Tom to talk about the tight end position.
Yeah, I see Gates with one more year of reliable football this year. Hopefully makes it through the 100%, but I see them making the transition to your guy there that you drafted this year. And hopefully, he doesn't go out, limping, But I do like that he did get Hooper, young kid there, seeing that, Tammy and Tolio down there are the two tight ends that are in front of him in Atlanta. Hopefully they swing things around down there on that offense. But nice, young, athletic kid, good hands, good route runner, smart kid.
Steve.
Yeah, I mean, very simple. He picked up a guy that he can keep on his roster for the next 5 years, and then just pick up tight ends either through drafting, trading, or free agency to kind of surround it. So I think he'll be okay there. No real improvement, but potential.
He's worse this year at tight end because last year he had Heath Miller, Ben Watson, Gates, and Crockett Gilmore. And Watson had a career year. Heath Miller has just been steady all along and a good touchdown guy. Miller retires. Watson goes to Baltimore. Gar decides not to sign him at the large contract, large dollar amount that it would have taken. You have to, in our league, make decisions on where you're going to allocate your cap space. And I actually would applaud him for not dumping too much into Ben Watson. So, yet with that said, I like that he picked up a young guy, but he did take a step down compared to last year during this off season. So over to the kicker spot. Actually, if anybody wants to talk about the kicker, go right ahead. It's pretty much Hoshka and McManus. That's what he had last year. No change.
No.
Just a good pickup to secure a good kicker for the next 3 years. So that was a good move.
Moving to defensive line, that's what we should talk about next. Kling finished third in the white division, far below the league average also. He picked up Cameron Wake to try to bolster his corps. I'm guessing he's not done, that he's going to do something with these moves that he has left to make at defensive line. How's the D-line looking to you, Tom?
Seattle and Miami. About all I can say is Averill's kind of on the outer end of his career as well. Bennett's, who knows what's going on there, contract situation, disgruntled player. Cameron Wake is an older D lineman, and I think he's going to have to use some of that money that he's got for free agents to fill this spot, or else find a trading partner out there, a la Ipswich, or maybe myself, or somebody else who's got a few extra defensive linemen that are willing to make a move.
Isn't that the good news for him, that there's defensive linemen out there, teams with depth, that he can go get a player here? Steve, what do you think of the defensive line spot?
Well, I think for the immediate future, it's good. The signing of Cameron Wake was good, and even if it's a three-year contract, the nice thing about that is that if he falls off, he can just drop him, and the worst he's going to lose is 55 cents. So that's not going to hurt him. But he's going to have to take a real good look. All these guys are 8-9 years into their career. Don't know how much gas they got left in the tank. So he's definitely going to have to keep an eye out in the future on how he's going to fill this spot.
I say he improved incrementally, just very small, with Cameron Wake. At least he's got another viable body on his team. But, you know, you can say it's flat at this point, really. So moving to D-Flex.
I wanted to point out real quick, Rick, that his biggest problem is he's limited in cap space, needs a lot of guys, and two of his defensive linemen are on bye the same week. So, I mean, he has to make an immediate move. Yes, he has to make an immediate move to get somebody who's not on bye week 5. And that's going to cost him.
Yeah, that or he's going to be fishing in week 5. D-Flex, last position to talk about here. We've got about 6.5 to 7 minutes left, so we're doing okay on time. I think Kling has some work to do here at D-Flex in the final weeks of our offseason. I count 5 viable starters, and that's if a rookie wins the starting linebacker job in Cleveland. Kling finished 2nd in the white division last year in defense, but he's only got 10 total defensive players on his roster right now. And you need to start 8, 2 defensive linemen, 6 D-Flex. He's only got 10 total defensive players on his team, and that's, again, counting 3 defensive linemen. So clearly with 15 spots on this roster that need to be filled, you can bet around half of those 15 spots are going to be filled on defense, right, Tom?
Yeah, I agree. If I'm him, I'm looking at Clinton Dix as maybe a trading party, or see if you could sucker somebody in on that 1-year deal for Polesny. Otherwise, like you said, he's going to be spending basically out of that $27, he's going to be spending about maybe 8 years. Just you only got, what, 3-3 possibly when the rookie takes that spot, so there'd be your 3-3. So yeah, he definitely needs to make some moves.
Steve, D-Flex.
Well, like you said, he has 10 guys, and 3 of them are by on week 5, and 3 of them are by week 8. So he's really got to just do some homework and some work just to get a starting 8 out of it. And we say he has $27.44, but actually only has $19.50 because he's going to have to, at a minimum, spend $7.50 just to fill out the rest of his roster. Kelvin Shepard had an okay year, but he was in Miami, but now he's actually in the depth chart in New York, so I don't know what he's going to pull out. He's going to have a difficult time getting 8 guys on the field that can give him a decent score on the defensive end of the ball.
He does have Carlos Dansby on a right of first refusal. I'll just throw that out there. But definitely I think we all are unanimous on this one, that it took a step down and that it definitely needs work before the opening bell whistle, I should say.
Yeah, the problem is he's got Dansby on right of first refusal, but I can see Dansby going for $8 to $10, probably more around the $8. Can he afford to go get that? I don't know.
Shifting gears, 25 total players to pick from here, but what would be your starting lineup today? If you're Gar, who out of this bunch are you starting? Tom, hit it.
Healthy Joe Flacco, I'm going to start him. Freeman, Durham, and then see where Jordy is at that point. And then, I don't know. We might have to throw in that rookie there, depending on where Jordy's at.
Then you got Lewis?
No, I don't think he's ready yet either. I think he's going to be a little while before he gets started this year. Corey Gates, go with Hoska. Going to have to go with Cameron Wake and Bennett if he's in there. And then, of course, at this point, you know, Matthews, Polesny, Shepard, and then the three DBs, since that's all he's got right now.
Steve?
Well, I would probably start Flacco, but, again, he's in another situation. All of his quarterbacks are on bye in week 8. So what is he going to do there? Obviously, Freeman, Ingram, and Nelson, and then just see which one of the other ones looks like they're going to make a move into starter worthiness. Gates, Hauschka, Bennett, Wake, and what, does he have to start? Does he have anybody else that he can't start on defense? I mean, I guess
no,
I would shut out.
Short.
Yeah, I guess I would. I would actually. I think Darian Thompson's going to be is going to be worthy of starting right away. I think he's going to at least put some points up. He's probably has a better chance of contributing than Scooby Wright or Kelvin Shepard. So I would probably take Clay's Polesny, Dix, Nelson, Thompson, and then I guess you got to go with Kelvin Shepard. I just don't see Scooby Wright making an impact very early.
Guys, we're running low on time.
I think Thompson's going to bankroll up there, man. I think he's a 160-plus guy.
We're running low on time. I would throw out Tannehill, Freeman, Ingram, Lewis, and Nelson. I would even bet you guys both that Tannehill outplays Flacco for the season. Gates would be my tight end. Hoschka, my kicker. I would stream. I'd get matchups on the defensive lineman, and I'd add something. And then at D-flex, Matthews, Posluszny, Scooby Wright, Clinton Dix, Reggie Nelson, and then you're kind of screwed. You just got to pick what's left. Do you guys think this lineup can compete for the White Division title? Real quick, yes, no, Tom?
No.
Steve?
No.
I'm going to have to say right now, no, because it's only 25 players, and like we said, we can't even fill a D-flex lineup right now. Guys, out of a 5-point scale, how would you rate the Klingons around Uranus' off-season moves? And again, we're about a minute and a half left.
Off-season moves, 3.5.
Steve?
Well, I'd say probably a 4 just from the cutting the fat and getting his roster in place to be able to try and start working to go forward.
I'd give him a 3. I just, you know, hopefully this is a team that we'll talk about after the free agent auction, and he has the ammo to make some trades. Hopefully it'll be a different picture, but right now there's improvement, a lot of it towards the future. So what I'm going to do, guys, is wrap the show up. You heard the alarm in the background. Let me hit a button here and start the music. So goodbye to you. I am going to say, big shock, we're out of time. We're squeezing every last drop of time we can. So stay tuned. The 2016 Offseason Moves Series, Team by Team Breakdown Series, continues next time when we focus on our own Stone Forum Pallies. Until then, I'd like to thank Tom Buckles and Steve Wellman for joining me tonight. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Goodbye to you.
Good night.